center net.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Here it is, put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hello, friends. Let's get another hour of Flames Talk underway. It is Tuesday, March 18th. Flames Talk available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Steinberg with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com this hour, and we welcome you to the Sports Drive. It's brought to you, as always, by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com. Hiya, Vicks.
I like the energy you're bringing here all of a sudden. Not that you don't always bring good energy, but there's something a little extra here. A guy's got some juice.
I get juiced up for a mailbag hour.
Yeah,
I honestly think it's some of the most fun that we have is just going around the horn on the text line at 960-960. And that's what we're doing this hour because, hey, we haven't done a mailbag since well before the trade deadline. The trade deadline has now passed. We're more than 10 days beyond trade deadline 2025. Obviously, the Flames didn't do anything on deadline day or leading up. Flames remain locked in a tooth and nail playoff fight. They've got 16 games to go. Do you have questions about the rest of this season? Do you have questions about line combinations, AHL recalls, next season's roster? How about some summer movement? It is all on the table for you at 960, 960. If you're listening live with us, get your questions in now because they come more rapid fire as things go along. We'll try to get to as many as we possibly can, but you've done these before, Vix.
I have.
You know that it becomes a little more rapid fire as we move towards the end of it, right?
Oh, yeah. Once that text line starts getting backlogged, let's just go.
So, are you ready to rock? Because we've got some texts already. I kind of like the way this thing is trending. We've got plenty of texts all ready to go.
Well, don't keep me waiting. The anticipation is too much.
Let's get to it. Get your questions in at 960, 960. We'll start with Adam, who says, it's been good to see Conroy. I have patience with this team, but I'm wondering in the offseason is when he starts to get a little bit more willing to move some pieces. What are the chances you think he moves some of the core veterans this offseason? If he does, what do you think the market looks like for them? It's a fair question, and it's something that I have wondered about myself in that they've put themselves or they put themselves and continue to have themselves in the playoff race, which is ahead of all expectations. Externally, it's obviously ahead of expectations. And I can tell you internally, the Flames didn't expect to be here and quite where they are at this stage either. So knowing that, Conroy decided to, hey, okay, let's send the right message to the room and not make any deadline moves. But that has never precluded or prohibited, rather, them reevaluating and resetting in the summertime. In fact, I think there is a decent chance they do just that. A few different reasons. What if they miss the playoffs? And now that's three straight years out of the playoffs for a guy like Nazem Kadri, who wants to win a Stanley Cup and is wired to win. Does that change his outlook on the final 4 years of his time in Calgary? Same with Blake Coleman, who will be entering the final year of his contract. Obviously, the Rasmus Anderson conversation becomes very, very fascinating. And I've said for the last month or so, after being very, very adamant about I think the Flames should re-sign Rasmus Anderson, well, I've walked that back myself. His struggles, and it's been a few months now where Rasmus's game has taken a pretty big step back, and I am not ready to say, yep, sign an 8-year deal, because I need to see what those numbers might look like. And while you can have kind of around the edges conversations with it, and you can, you know, get some initial thoughts and you can get a framework-ish, you can't really get into the nitty-gritty and start negotiating until July 1st. And so if I'm the Flames, I'd want to see what those contract talks look like, where the Anderson camp is, and how much of a gap there is between what you're prepared to do, how he plays in this most important stretch, and what type of trade market exists and all those things. I think you need to, on the Anderson front, really evaluate before you put pen to paper on a contract extension if it's going to go that way. So long story short to Adam's question, Vix, I think, yes, there is a possibility of a reset and just a, hey, you know, we gave it a try this year. We always said this is a bigger picture thing, and maybe we do see a couple of bigger names potentially moved or talked about moving in the summertime.
To me, Rasmus Anderson potentially is the first domino to fall. I say potentially because, again, he can't sign an extension until July 1st, and a week before that is the draft, and we know the draft tends to be a hub for activity, so we'll see what happens there. But for me, the domino would be Rasmus Anderson, and you get a full understanding of what his ask from a contract perspective is. Does it fit internally with the Flames budget? Not that they wouldn't want to spend the money, but you've got to be pragmatic about things, and you have to have an upper limit if you're Craig Conroy approaching this thing. And to be perfectly honest, Rasmus Anderson might toss out a number that is very much a thanks, but no thanks. I'd like to explore things elsewhere when the contract expires. So if you get a number from Rasmus Anderson, if you're Conroy in the Flames and you go, well, that's just not going to work, it makes sense to deal him in the offseason to get as much value for him as you can. And if Anderson decides, or if the Flames decide that the ask from Anderson is too high and that you do explore the trade market, what does it do to the rest of the veteran core, whether it be, as you mentioned, Kadri, Coleman, so on and so forth, of players like, okay, well, if we're going to end up seeing a futures deal for Rasmus Anderson, whether it's a pick prospect, not an immediate return like potentially we've seen from Jacob Markstrom that brought back a ball that could help right away, or Tyler Toffoli with Sharon Govich, if it's a futures deal, I imagine the likes of Kadri and Coleman, for the reasons you've said, past Stanley Cup winners, haven't seen the playoffs in some time. I wonder if that trickle-down effect is, okay, well, if this is going to be a bit of a shift towards the future, if there is a deal that makes sense from your perspective, please explore it on my behalf. To me, the first domino in this conversation would be Rasmus.
Well, and I think even the first domino before that would be, do they make the playoffs? And if they do, what does that look like? How competitive are they in the postseason against the Jets? And do they pull off a round one upset? Do they push it to six or seven, or do they get bounced in four? I think all those things would also play into the mindset of some of these veterans, especially, you know, we're talking about, what, 7 years left or 6 years left on Huberdeau and Uyghur's contract. A little bit more cumbersome to move.
Right.
Four on Kadri, one on Anderson, what, one on Coleman. So, yeah, it would be, or two on Coleman. So it gives you a little bit more flexibility with some of those veterans. Zach in Kensington, you mentioned Sharon Govich. Let's move there. Guys, are we sold on Sharon Govich? I honestly don't know what kind of player he is. Would you say he's a part of the future, or is he a filler for the roster right now? Well, the answer is, am I sold? No. Look, I'm obviously concerned about the contract that hasn't even begun. Yeah. Very concerned, because this has been a nightmare year two for Sharon Govich with the Flames. And the contract hasn't even started yet. It starts next season for 5 years. So that is very concerning, the trend here. But a couple of things. First of all, I do wonder if this is a lost season on the Sharon Govich front. The injury that started the season, I think that maybe he rushed himself back, and or the Flames, you know, kind of, I don't want to say got rushed back from health reasons, but maybe he just came back when it's all said and done a little too early. He's been bounced from center to the wing. I think he might be playing through something right now. There's definitely those innuendos out there. I just wonder if this is a lost season for Sharon Govich. So as it stands right now on March 18th, I'm not ready to say that was a bad decision to sign him to the extension, as bad as this season has been. Do I think he's a 35 goal scorer on a yearly basis? Maybe not. But I do think that there is, like, we're talking about a skilled player with a great shot, and we know he can finish. It just hasn't been happening on a regular basis this year. And so if we're still talking about this in like November, December, then yeah, I start to move towards maybe they shouldn't have signed him. But if he can prove that this is just a lost season and have a much better year next year, fully healthy, and goes into the offseason with the right mindset, all those types of things, I still think this is salvageable. So Am I sold? Well, no, I can't be sold based on what we're seeing. Am I completely out on the player, though? No, not yet, but it's been a nightmare year two for him in a Flames uniform, there's no doubt.
Yeah, sold, no. Writing him off, no. And when the Flames signed him to that extension, three of his four NHL seasons, he scored at a 25-goal pace or greater, and he was coming off an NHL career-high 31 goals. Now, we all know he's on pace for half that this season, and it's been a massive disappointment in terms of where expectations were from a year ago or from even in the summer when he signs the extension. Is it an injury-plagued season in the sense that he didn't get off to the start that he wanted to because of the injury he sustained in the final period of preseason action? Did he rush back? Are there any lingering effects, or is he playing through something else? I can't speak to that. But you have to be disappointed in what you've seen out of Sharon Govich, both from a production standpoint, from an eye test standpoint. Yes, he's bounced around from wing to center and back and forth and back and forth. Still, the onus is on the player, regardless of circumstance, to find a way to contribute night in, night out. We haven't seen that from Sharon Govich, but I'm not willing to write him off completely just
no,
yet.
No, I'm not. And again, like there's enough innuendo that he's playing through something, and so get healthy. You almost wonder, like, we know it was we think it was an ankle, but it was a lower body injury that he
high
sustained.
Ankle,
yeah, we thought it was a high ankle, but it was, I don't think it was ever announced high ankle, but that was kind of like the thought, the injury that he sustained in the final preseason game. And you wonder how much that whole thing just sent his season into disarray. So we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, am I sold? No. Am I completely out on the player? No. But I understand the worry and concern about the contract that kicks in. Derek and Cochran, here's a fun one. I've got my answer. I'll give it first so you can think a little bit. But other than Zane Parekh, what prospect are you most expecting to or excited for possibly making the team? Do you have any dark horses? I do have a bit of a dark horse. Do you have yours, or do you want me to go first?
No, you go first, but I'm wondering, is there a timeline on when they make the Flames?
No.
So it's not like next season. It's not.
No.
Okay, you go first.
Mine's a 2024 draft pick, Luke Misa. I know he's undersized. He's 5'10", 175, 176 is what he's listed at. So we are talking about right now, at the age of 19, an undersized guy, but every time I have watched this guy play granted, I'm not a scout, I'm not watching a ton of OHL, but every time I have watched this guy play Ontario League games, he's popped. He popped almost every shift at the Young Stars Classic in Penticton. I kind of see Luke Misa as, do I see him being like a top one or two center in the NHL? No, but I could see him being a nice, effective bottom six center iceman in this league. You know, I'm trying to think of some comparables. He's not a right shot, but similar to a guy like Derek Ryan, perhaps, you know, quote unquote, undersized, not a big guy, but Misa thinks it. He's got nice skill. The puck is glued to his stick. I think he has good vision and sees it well. And so if you're talking about a dark horse, and I think we're probably talking 2-3 years down the road, but if you're talking about a dark horse, for me, I think Luke Misa is one to keep an eye on. I really like the way that his career is trending.
So the obvious answer from my perspective, which I'm sure you're aware of, I'm going to steer clear of it. I'm going to say William Stromgren. We've heard a lot of great things from the development staff on him, the coaching staff with the Wranglers, from Craig Conroy, as a guy that William Stromgren is, the expectation of him is to push for a spot soon. I'm going to go, though, to the 2024 class as well, and I'm going to go Henry Muse, who was taken in the third round, 74th overall, and we quite liked him at FC Hockey in his draft season. We had him ranked 42nd overall, so a little bit of a value pick there. All he's done since being drafted is, he is dynamic as they come in terms of, well, I shouldn't say that because Zane Parekh is in the Ontario Hockey League as well. So that wouldn't be doing Muse a service, to be perfectly honest with you. But his draft year, 61 points in 65 games. He's on pace for 86 points this year. The only concern I might have in terms of Muse is the fact that he is also a right shot defenseman like Parekh, and the organization is going to be I mean, it's a good problem to have if you're the Flames, but they're going to have a lot of right shot defense prospects coming up at the same time. They are sort of almost going to graduate together, or you'll see one year, a couple of the year after that, so on and so forth. So there's going to be a lot of competition, both at the AHL level and knocking on the door at the NHL level to get in. But Henry Muse is an offensive defenseman. He's mobile. I think he's made strides in sort of his 200-foot game. I don't necessarily think the defensive aspect of his game was a significant hindrance at the OHL level, but you always want a defenseman to round out his full 200-foot game, both in junior and as they look to graduate to pro. But I can't disagree with your Misa comment, but I'm going to go Muse.
Muse is not eligible for the American League next year, and it sounds like he'll be going the NCAA route. So he'll go from Sudbury, where he was traded a few months ago. I guess about a month ago, he got traded to Sudbury. So he is reportedly heading to the University of Michigan in the NCAA next year, and is not eligible to play in the American League. Misa, as an 05 draft year, though, is eligible for the American League next year. So that could be where we see Luke Misa next season. Speaking of which, I like this question. Zane Parekh is obviously too good for the CHL, but in my opinion, I'd like to see him in the AHL, which isn't possible because he's 18. So my question is, what should the NHL do so that players like Zane can be granted exceptional status in the AHL? I'm not sure he's quite ready for the NHL, and I feel like I get the NHL, I don't know what the end is trying to say, so I won't read the rest of it, but you get the gist of the question. What can they do to help a player like Zane Parekh, who's not eligible for the American League, but also may not be ready for the NHL and is well beyond the Ontario League or Major Junior?
Yeah.
And I think we all know that he is.
There's no reason for him to play OHL games next season. Now, the conundrum as laid out is he's not AHL eligible. Technically speaking, as it stands today, my understanding is he's not eligible for the NCAA either.
I can confirm he's not as of March 18th. And the Flames had no idea. Flames were a victim. And a few other teams fell into this. Victim of bad luck. They signed Parekh in July to his entry-level contract before it was known that the NCAA was going to allow major junior players to come play college hockey. Had they known that, they probably wouldn't have signed him. And they would have at the very least kept the option on the table for him to go the NCAA route next year. But as of right now, he's not eligible to go to the NCAA. He's not eligible to go to the American League. The problem is that there's nothing that can be done right now until it's collectively bargained, and we're still like a year and a half away from a new CBA. I do wonder if there is some sort of rule that or exception, as this texter has brought up. Essentially, I doubt it, though, because essentially the reason why this rule exists is because the NHL has agreed to protect
the Canadian Hockey League.
They don't want, or the CHL doesn't want, their best players going to the American League, and they would rather, for business reasons, keep their players in major junior hockey so that these small markets can have their stars draw fans, and you get it. And the NHL agreed to that, you know, a few decades ago, and that remains the case right now. I just don't know, now that major junior players have a chance to go to the NCAA, I don't know if the CHL is going to be like, yeah, okay, well, let's also let them go to the American League. I feel like it kind of feels like this rule is here to stay. So, but the fix for the future is the NCAA. Now that that's known, teams will be taking that into account. So on the Parekh front, the Flames got a little unlucky, but Flames or the 31 other NHL teams going forward, I think will be a little bit less eager to sign drafted players out of the CHL to their entry-level deals and keep that option of going to the American League open.
Listen, the Canadian Hockey League is going to lose significant assets in terms of player personnel to the NCAA, both next season and seasons beyond. And I can't imagine they're going to be keen to do that again to the American Hockey League, even if you gave one or every NHL team a one-player exemption where that player can go. You're still robbing that league of 32 of its best players. And from a business standpoint, from an on-ice product standpoint, that's not great. I do wonder if, because as it stands again, March 18th, Parekh is not eligible for the American Hockey League and there's no reason for him to go back to the OHL. I do wonder if there isn't a one-year sort of gap year, if you will, where he goes over and plays in the SHL or plays in Switzerland.
Somebody brought that up on postgame last night, and I as an NHL team, you don't now, like, the SHL doesn't care about your, like, they don't care about your player's development.
But you can't tell me he can't go over to one of those men's leagues and be a top pairing defenseman.
But are they gonna push the same things with him that the Flames want him? Like, if,
well, that's where you'd have to be very selective as to where he goes and have an understanding and having a working relationship with that organization already.
And
I'm not saying drop him in Copenhagen, for example. Copenhagen.
Do we have any examples of that happening before?
Well, like Brant Clark in his draft year. And there was some issues like that was Austin Matthews but those in his draft year as well.
I can't remember a top prospect, a drafted top prospect going to Europe like that.
But the problem is Breck is somewhat of a unique situation in his own right, where like if your only options are the NHL and the Ontario Hockey League, and he comes into camp next year and isn't good enough to play significant time with the Flames, you're not sending him back to the Ontario Hockey League. You can loan him to Europe, and then if there's a sense that it's not working, I believe you can recall him off that loan.
I think you bite the bullet. If he's not fully ready, I still think you keep him in the NHL, and you kind of go the Leo Carlson route, and you do some load management and some game management, and maybe he only plays 45 games in his first NHL season, but he stays at the team all year, practices with the team all year. The development squad is there with them, hands-on the entire year, coaching staff, strength and fitness, all that type of stuff. Of all the, because there's not an ideal, I think the ideal would be American League, but the ideal doesn't exist. So of all the non-ideal options, I think the NHL is probably the best way, because I don't think he's going to be so, I don't think his camp is going to be so poor that it's clear he can't play in the NHL. And I think we're all on the same page that what is the point of him going back to the Ontario League, right?
Well, at the end of the day, no, like he's in his last season in the Ontario Hockey League, regardless of like what the plan is. Like, there's no benefit at all. Like, what's he going to do? Go back there and score 150 points? Like, where's the benefit in terms of development from that element? I can't get on board with your Leo Carlson sort of method or mold. My concern is, okay, if he's only playing 40 games and if he's only playing 40 games, he's probably playing in a third pairing role, so he's only seeing 10 to 12 minutes a night.
But still getting some power play time.
Is that going to stunt some things for him?
I think there's zero chance of anything getting stunted if they do that, especially if they, maybe zero chance is a little bit black and white, but I just think there is a very, 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 very low chance that a 19-year-old Zane Parekh, if they really approach it with a plan in place, has his development stunted. I just think it's the best of the non-ideal options. And who knows, maybe he's ready. Maybe it's not close. And yeah, you got to protect him. And yeah, he's got to work on things. And if you're the Flames, if you're Ryan Huska and the coaching staff, and this is the way they go, you have to be okay with the mistakes. You can't bench him every time there's a defensive mistake. But if you're okay with all of the things that you put in place as your plan for him, that to me feels like the best option here.
It's too bad that Hawk and Lube isn't running Farjestad still, because you'd have a relationship with somebody there, and you could have honest conversations about what the expectation is. I do agree that the best case scenario is Parekh comes in and he proves that he deserves to be on an NHL roster, whether that's playing 30 games, 50 games, 82 games. That's your best case scenario. But It is a shame he signed that contract, because I could see the NCAA for a single year benefiting him from an off ice perspective,
and maybe even multiple years. I mean, who knows? I mean, it could have been, but that option doesn't exist as things stand right now. A couple of notes on that, by the way. So there's two numbers that are important when it comes to players. Number one is the 10 game rule, which impacts the actual contract. So if you play 9 games as a drafted player out of the CHL, 9 games or less, your entry-level contract does not start rolling. The minute you play a 10th game, your entry-level starts tolling, your entry-level deal, and you burn a year. Doesn't matter if you only play 11, you've burnt that year. The other important number, and this goes back to Leon Draisaitl's rookie year in the NHL, the Edmonton Oilers kept Draisaitl past the 10-game threshold but sent him back to the Western League midway through the season. He went back to, I believe Prince Albert had traded him to Kelowna while he was a member of the Oilers still. But the Oilers sent him back, and they got him back before what I believe is the 40-game threshold. The minute you play in a 40th game, you earn a year of unrestricted free agency eligibility, and those are the two important numbers. So if you play less than the 40-game threshold, you don't earn a year of UFA eligibility, which is also an important number. A couple rapid-fire ones before we pause. This reads, just wondering if you guys have any thoughts on Henry Muse. He's also having a great season in the OHL. We do, because Vix just named him the prospect he's most important, rather most excited about going forward. Do I have one more? Do we have one more? No, a lot of these ones aren't rapid fire options, so we'll get to them in just a couple minutes. It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you. Flames Talk mailbag, we have a ton of them. If you want to get them in, keep them coming though at 960-960. Vickers, Steinberg, this hour of Flames Talk, and we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Flames Talk mailbag. Let's just keep it going. It's Steinberg and Vickers. Keep them coming at 960, 960. I won't read the whole text because it is rather lengthy, but I will read the last paragraph. Essentially, it's the same. It's a similar conversation that has been had before about not going all in to a rebuild and so on and so forth. But the last paragraph or last sentence: at what point does the organization realize that simply patching holes is not enough and that a true long-term vision is needed to build a legitimate contender? What I keep saying on this front is, since Craig Conroy has taken over, he has traded away the likes of Tyler Toffoli, Elias Lindholm, Nikita Zadorov, Chris Tanev, Noah Hanifin, Jacob Markstrom, and Andrew Mangiapane, seven core pieces or core-ish pieces, and in every single one of those trades, a pick has come back. In every single one of those trades, a younger player has come back. Like, at no point has he made a trade for any one of those seven guys that has attempted to patch the hole immediately. This wasn't Tkachuk for Huberdeau and Uyghur. You know, Sharangovich was significantly younger than Toffoli, and they got the third-round pick. And they got a first-round pick with Miramanov. They got a first-round pick with Ball. And so, I guess what I'd say is, has he kind of already, and I know a lot of those things were forced on him, but, like, has he kind of committed quite fully to getting younger? And yes, he's been very open that they're not going to attempt to lose. But they didn't go out and try to patchwork things with big-name free agents. They signed Mantha for one. They signed Bean and Cooley and Lomberg for two. My argument would be that this is a 3 to 5 year plan. He does have a roadmap of getting there. You may not agree with it or agree fully with the approach, but we're 66 games into that plan being realized, because that first year was all house cleaning. That first year was all taking care of the mess that was left for him. And now the plan is in place. It started with 10 draft picks at the 2024 NHL draft, including a potential franchise player in Zane Parekh and some other really exciting players, from Battaglia to Muse to Basha to Misa and more. And I think that it is very clear 66 games into this season that the Flames are where they are more than anything else because of one player, and that player just happens to be their 23-year-old potential franchise piece goaltender, what I believe is their franchise piece goaltender, and his name is Dustin Wolf. And so I guess what I'd say is, Wolf is hiding many... I think Dustin Wolf has been responsible for 8 to 10 standings points this year on his own. And as such, without him, this team isn't where they are and is probably in the mix for a top 10 pick. And that worry doesn't exist. Long story short, I do think there's a plan here, Vix. I do think that Craig Conroy has convinced Murray Edwards to let him do things differently than they've been done for the last 2-3 decades. Whether or not it works, we don't know. But I keep on saying, like, he's doing things differently than they've been done for so long. And I say let the guy cook and see how it turns out. And only 1 year in to judge it and to say it's going to be successful or unsuccessful is pretty premature, if you ask me.
I need to lean on your memory because I'm going to ask you a question that I don't know the answer to. Otherwise, why would I ask it? But your memory is sharper than mine, so help me out. Mm-hmm. Outside of Miramanov, who I would argue is the third most important piece in the Noah Hanifin trade after the first round pick and the conditional third that came back, and the Lindholm deal to Vancouver with Kuzmenko being 31, and I would have argued at that point Kuzmenko was the fifth most valuable piece in that deal to make the salary work.
Yeah.
Have they acquired anybody older than Morgan Frost who will turn 26 in May?
And no, I mean, Kuzmenko and Miramanov would be the guys, but no.
So isn't that the vision right there?
And at no point in any one of those trades, did they get better immediately? And the answer is no. Every single one of those trades.
Well, except for the Frost-Farabee deal, I would argue.
No, I don't count that one. I'm talking about the ones where they traded away veteran core pieces. In all seven of those trades, ending with Mangiapane, starting with Toffoli, they got worse every single time on paper. The Markstrom trade, the Mangiapane trade didn't bring anybody back. The Tanev trade didn't bring anybody back right now. The Hanifin trade did, but he's struggled mightily.
Well, and even then, I would argue that even at that point in time, you weren't acquiring an NHL defenseman in Miramanov. You were acquiring somebody you hoped could be.
Right.
And in that sense, I would put the first round pick that came back and the third round pick that came back as more important or more valuable than Miramanov. Miramanov was a dart throw that you scouted and you saw at the American Hockey League level a lot, had limited NHL experience, but you thought and maybe hoped could be an NHLer. Like, is that not as clear a direction as could be for the Flames in terms of, okay, we're going to be losing a lot of veterans, we're going to trade out a lot of veterans and pending unrestricted free agents, and you brought back essentially what Conroy said, we want draft picks, we want prospects, and we want players between the ages of 23 and 25. That's all they brought in. That seems like a clear path to me. Whether or not you agree with the path, whether or not you agree with, well, they should have went scorched earth rebuild and acquired no NHL-ready players and just went draft picks and just went prospects, you can disagree with that. But in terms of what Craig Conroy has said he wanted to execute, he's executed to a T.
This reads, have you guys noticed a ton of puck battles being lost by the Flames since the Four Nations and the few games prior? That has zero to do with skill, plain and simple hard work. Team looks tired. Wonder if something to do with Huska's style. It demands a ton of hard work, which wears on you 65 games in. Could very well be happening. Yes, I have noticed that. And I do think it is important to point out that this team's defensive metrics have fallen significantly too. You know, we know how much they're having trouble scoring, but now in the back half of the season, through October, November, December, this was a very strong suppressing team at 5-on-5, or their metrics were, you know, top 10, top 15 in the NHL. But since the new year, that's really gone the other way. And maybe some of the areas that were playing a little over their head have come back down to earth a little bit. The Flames are now 21st overall in shot suppression when it comes to shot attempts. They're also 21st overall at natural stat trick in terms of high danger scoring chances against. They're in the bottom half of the league defensively in a lot of metrics, on top of we all know where they are offensively. This is one of the most this is one of the more anemic offensive teams in the NHL and the lowest scoring team overall. So I wonder if that is a tired thing. I wonder if that's a taxing brand of hockey to play. I wonder if they were at times a little over their head. You know, we asked some questions about this blue line and whether or not with Anderson and Uyghur is the only proven top four defenseman, Ball has done a nice job putting himself in that spot, but like, could this blue line hold out all year long. Goaltending has not been as good over the last month and a half or so. Last 20 games or so, goaltending hasn't been quite statistically as strong. All that to say is that, yeah, I have noticed just across the board, this Flames group has dipped, and maybe we shouldn't be surprised by that because of what the expectations were. And honestly, this team started 5-0-1, and they're still living on that 5-0-1 start. The reason they're still in this thing is because of that six-game start. They are a 500 team since that 5-0-1 start. Across the board, a 500 team. They are a below 500 team now in the year of 2025. So, yeah, I mean, this team has come back down to earth a little bit. They're still finding ways to win some games, and Dustin Wolf continues to be their best player. But there have been some areas that have slipped. You can't deny that.
Well, it's a taxing system physically, but it's also taxing mentally, too, when you're a low-scoring team and you have to check for your chances and you have to defend first. And knowing that one mistake literally in the game can be the difference between winning and losing, just because your margin of error is so thin with the brand you play and with the lack of offense that you possess. The other thing too is, and let me float this by you.
We gotta go. Let's go rapid fire. But let's.
There's the cliche that the league jumps four times a year in terms of pace. It's Thanksgiving. It's the new year. It's post deadline, and then it's playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a player necessarily I'd point to that has elevated at each point of those seasons. And so that puts even more strain, even more emphasis on the system, the taxing play physically, mentally. I buy into that.
Yeah, I do too. And we'll see if they can overcome, because Cam in the Northwest says, do you guys feel the Flames have it in them to go on a winning run? Yeah, I mean, sure. I think that there could be that in them. But as I've said, they've been a 500 team through November, December, January, February, and now March. So it's going to have to happen soon, and it would be bucking the trend of the way they've played the last number of months. But yeah, they got 16 games to go. Could I see it? Sure, I could. I mean, and we've seen lots of teams at this time of year. A Nashville Predators team 2 years ago went on a winning run that nobody saw coming. They can happen. Am I counting on it? Not necessarily, but sure, I could see it happening.
I could see a six-game point streak being, well, this is obvious, being much more likely than a six-game winning streak with this group. And in fact, you don't have to look too far to see a five-game point streak. I don't know if I see necessarily a lengthy winning streak in this group, but I could see them collecting points and collecting points and collecting points.
This says, guys, do you see Zane Parekh coming in for the end of the year, much like Cale Makar? So here is the issue with that. Saginaw is clinched for the playoffs and will almost certainly, their season ends in 5 days. March 23rd is the final day of the OHL regular season. Saginaw is playoff bound and currently sits fourth in the Western Conference. They're going to have home ice. They're likely almost certainly going to play Erie in round one, which will be a very competitive series by everybody I've spoken to. This is not your OHL expert over here, but Erie Saginaw will likely be a very competitive series. And so if that's the way it goes, and if Saginaw gets through, then I would say unlikely, because if Saginaw gets through and they're playing round two, that probably takes them to the end of the season. If they go out in round two and the Flames make the playoffs, could that possibility exist? Sure, but I don't think Zane Parekh is Cale Makar when Cale Makar was coming out of UMass. If that guy was ready for the NHL a year prior, I don't think that's where we are with Zane Parekh, and I don't know if a guy who is somewhat undersized right now to begin with, coming into the most physical demanding time of year, is the way to go. Is there a possibility? Like, could it happen? Sure. Is it likely? My read would be no.
I would expect Saginaw. I do think it'll be a competitive series. I do think Saginaw, with their experience and what have you, is able to topple Erie, but I don't see them beating one of London, Windsor, or Kitchener. So would he be available late season, early playoffs? Yes. I don't know if that's the situation you want to toss him into, though.
This says at 960. Guys, my buddies and I all think that they needed to trade Anderson as part of a package to acquire some offensive help. Do you agree? I think that not needed, but that they need to. If they end up going down the Anderson trade route, if you could get yourself some offensive help, that would definitely be a nice addition for them, no doubt about it.
I mean, my priority would be a center. And if you can find a 23 to 25-year-old center that helps that offensive pop, even better.
Dustin says, doesn't it seem like a huge missed opportunity to not add a scoring forward before the deadline and or a huge miscalculation of not unloading a player or two if they knew they couldn't add to make sure they got below the bottom 10 to retain their first overall pick or their first round pick.
Yeah.
To think they could depend on their rookie goalie for the entire season to make it and having the lowest scoring team in the league and just lose that first round pick to the Habs seems like a horrible decision. Here is what the mindset was, whether Dustin or you agree with it. Craig Conroy said, we're not deviating from the long-term plan, so we're not going to all of a sudden just start giving up future assets to try to help right now. That was non-negotiable. If there was another trade like the Frost-Farabee trade out there, then he would have done it, but it really wasn't. Even the Cousins deal that was made with Ottawa, I don't think the Flames had the pieces that the Sabres were looking for to make that happen. And then on the other front, not unloading, as we said earlier, I think Craig Conroy said, this group has gotten this far. Let's see if they can do it. Not to suggest that he's like, oh, we're going to rely on Wolf and we're going to get in. No, it was a more of a pragmatic decision than that. And I think that isn't being given enough credence, is that that was a very pragmatic call by this team to not add or subtract at the deadline. I guess you could say it would have been quite ruthlessly pragmatic if they decided to subtract, but decided that, hey, this is the group that's gotten us here, and we can always make those pragmatic calls again in the summertime. Let's see what this group can do. Let's see what playing important games down the stretch and maybe in the playoffs can do for some of our young players, and then let's reevaluate in the summer. So, no, I don't think their deadline approach was a mistake myself.
You shouldn't be expending assets to buy at the deadline, and to your point, what they would have received from their pending unrestricted free agents, I don't think was considerable. And all the actual big ticket moves that you could have made, whether, you know, you're looking at Rasmus Anderson or a Kadri, I don't know what was available, what was out there, but those are decisions you can make in the off season. So there's no need to rush. And I think to an extent you do owe it to the group that's gotten you this far to see if they can carry you over the finish line and qualify for the playoffs.
Andrew in Airdrie says, regardless of what team makes the final playoff spot in the West, will they be considered a bad team like the Washington Capitals were last year? Well, the big knock on the Capitals last year was their goal differential, which was about minus 200, I think, if I remember correctly.
I think you're in the ballpark.
No, it was when it's all said and done, Washington made it last year at minus 37. The goal differentials on the current teams in the mix, Vancouver minus 18, St. Louis even, Calgary minus 25, Utah minus 8. So I guess it depends what team gets in.
I don't feel confident in declaring any of those four teams
knocking off
Winnipeg.
Yeah, I think that every single one of those teams will be looked at as a massive underdog against the Winnipeg Jets.
That's exactly how I would say.
A couple more. Brett says, Brenton Langdon, what do you guys think Conroy will do to get more talent? The AHL is decimated. There's not much left. Is this how they're going to look for the next 2 to 3 years? Again, I don't think you're giving enough credence to potential moves this summer.
Well, there's that, but you always have a prospect pool graduating from the
plus
junior ranks.
Plus, yeah, exactly.
To the pro ranks.
As of today, put a percentage number on the likelihood these two players play 40 games or more with the Flames next year. Hunter Brustevich, Zane Parekh. I will say, I'm like, on Parekh, I would say 80% he plays more than 40 NHL games. Hunter Brustevich, more like 35%.
I'm going to go 50 and 25.
For
50 for Parekh, 25 for Brustevich.
Okay. How do you see Conroy taking a shot at getting a top six center? I think that if they decide to, whether it is move on from a guy like Anderson or Kadri or somebody else, then I think that could happen. That would be the type of player they would target, especially in an Anderson trade. That would be an area that they could really target if they're going to do that.
Yeah, if you're talking short-term next season, it's got to be via trade if we're talking about 2, 3, 4 years down the road through the draft.
Last question. Who is your daddy and what does he do? Very funny. Who is your daddy and what does he do? Those things were the funny, those soundboard prank calls that came out in the early 2000s. Hilarious at the time. So what's a good reference? And that's a good way to wrap things up on the roundtable. Boy, we had a ton of texts. We got to as many as we could. If we read yours, thank you. If we didn't read yours, thank you. We'll do it again in the next few weeks. Always enjoy a good Flames Talk mailbag. Aaron Vickers, thank you, pal. He's on Twitter at AA Vickers. Our producers this hour, Taylor Dingman and Cam Hughes. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.